Runaway Country is brought to you by Quince. You know those pieces in your closet that you find yourself reaching for over and over again? The sweater that somehow works with everything? The jeans you know will always fit just right, or the bag you carry everywhere? Those are the pieces that earn a permanent place in your wardrobe, and that is exactly what Quince does so very well. Quince makes elevated everyday essentials using premium materials like Mongolian cashmere, organic cotton, and washable silk. The designs are timeless, thoughtfully crafted, and made to be worn again and again. Their 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters start at just $50, giving you the softness and quality you would expect from a luxury brand without the luxury price tag. I love my Quince jewelry. I have some Quince hoops that you can see me in any old day because I wear them all the time. They are lightweight, they are so well crafted, and they go with everything. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and they cut out the middlemen, so you are paying for quality, not brand markup. Find the fall pieces you'll reach for most at Quince. Download the Quince app for app exclusive offers or go to quince.com/runaway. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada and the UK too. That is quince.com/runaway.
On Question Everything from KCRW and Placement Theory, we tell stories about people who are fighting for the truth, like this psychologist at Cornell.
We wanted to test the basic idea that people who believe conspiracies will never change their mind, no matter what.
And did you have a hypothesis?
Yeah, our hypothesis is that they wouldn't.
Turns out, he was wrong. These researchers built an AI chatbot that convinced people out of conspiracy theories. Facts, it turns out, still matter. Listen to Question Everything every Thursday.
Your sausage McMuffin with egg didn't change. Your receipt did. The sausage McMuffin with egg extra value meal includes a hash brown and a small coffee for just $5. Only at McDonald's for a limited time.
Price and participation may vary. Promotion pricing may be lower than meal pricing.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of new items, like Honeycrisp apples for $2.99 a pound and boneless, skinless chicken breasts for just $3.99 a pound. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through November 4th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Hi, everyone. Happy start of the school year to all who celebrate. As exhilarating as it is to send the kids off to school and finally get them out of your living room, I mean, see the love of learning shine in their bright, bright eyes. This year, the process of packing the kids off for class has gotten a lot more fraught. That is because the U.S. is experiencing the biggest measles outbreak in 35 years. Nearly all of the roughly 3,100 reported cases are among unvaccinated children or those children with unknown vaccination status. Right now, the outbreak is worst in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Iowa, but so far this year, the highly contagious virus has hit Texas, Utah, Virginia, Florida, Arizona, and above all, South Carolina, which has seen three times as many cases as any other state. If you're wondering why this is happening, here's what President Trump said in August as he signed an executive order to reduce the number of recommended childhood vaccines and split up combination shots, including the one for measles, mumps, and rubella. It is worth noting a measles-only vaccine does not yet exist in the United States.
And I saw this early on, and I've seen proof of it, where they have a vaccination that looks like the size of a bottle of soda poured into a little child's body, and bad things happen in too many cases, because this is an explosion, this is an epidemic.
For the record, a typical vaccine dosage is about 1/10 of a teaspoon, and we are by no means in a vaccine epidemic, although the country very well could be barreling towards a measles epidemic. The president is fear-mongering about vaccines at the exact same time that his Secretary of Health and Human Services, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., is downplaying the very serious, deadly threat of measles. And it is causing a political scandal. Last month, two infants with measles died in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. In the aftermath, Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro pointed directly at medical disinformation promoted by the HHS secretary.
Been sitting out in the parking lot talking to Secretary Kennedy, who reached out to me. I was very, very blunt with him. And I made very clear that his actions and the rhetoric that's coming from this administration are having a negative impact on communities across America, particularly right here in Pennsylvania.
What followed that is a flurry of questions, attacks, and denials. The CDC, which Kennedy oversees, refused to count the infant deaths in its official national tally of measles cases. Kennedy then alleged that the Pennsylvania deaths were possibly fabricated and trotted out his favorite hobby horse, COVID skepticism.
We're still trying to get information about the measles deaths. The so-called measles deaths in Lancaster County, I talked with the county coroner or the county commissioner this morning, and he says there were no measles deaths. There was a press conference by the governor. It was highly politicized, and we saw a lot of the sort of old COVID playbook rolled out.
Ultimately, the Lancaster County coroner, a Republican, determined that in one of the cases, the infant died from a spleen laceration, even though the child had tested positive for measles hours after birth, and measles can cause an enlarged spleen, which can lead it to rupture. The state's health secretary, for her part, still says the death was measles-related. The other infant, a six-week-old baby with a rare genetic condition, was confirmed to have died at home due to measles. At the end of the day, Governor Shapiro wrote on X that Kennedy's skepticism about the causes of death led to a firestorm of conspiracy theories that denied these families pain, invaded their privacy, and undermined public health. There are two levels of terrifying to this whole mess. First, American children are dying of preventable diseases. And second, they may be dying because of medical disinformation being spread by people at the highest levels of our government. In other words, Donald Trump, one of the most politically savvy charlatans in American history, has now allowed lies and conspiracies to become federal policy. And it is literally killing us. I'm Alex Wagner, and this week on Runaway Country, the Trump administration is destroying the institution of public health brick by brick. What does it mean when politically convenient conspiracy theories infect federal policy? I'm going to be talking to two doctors for this episode to get an idea of what it is like to be on the front lines of this current and very preventable health crisis. Dr. Deborah Greenhouse is a pediatrician in Columbia, South Carolina, where the measles outbreak topped 600 cases earlier this year. She also spends a fair bit of time testifying in front of her Republican-controlled legislature on the importance of vaccines. I'll also speak with Dr. Nathan Keller of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, the new epicenter of the measles outbreak. I'll be getting his insight on how the community is managing the terrifying spread of a deadly virus. And then I will be putting it all into context with my favorite fellow crooked parent, Aaron Ryan, who takes conspiracy theories, whether they're about public health or Melania Trump's whereabouts, very seriously. We'll get into Trump's tinfoil-hatted administration and why a lot of Americans are so paranoid to begin with. But first up, Dr. Deborah Greenhouse. Here's our conversation. First of all, thank you for doing this.
My pleasure.
I'm so eager to, we read these headlines about these measles outbreaks, but it's hard for, I think, some folks who are in, you know, different communities where there are higher vaccination rates to really understand the peril. And I know the outbreak in your state officially ended in April. Can you just walk me through what it was like to be a doctor in a state that had a significant outbreak? I think 900, almost 1,000 people were infected with measles, most of them unvaccinated children. What was that like?
It was terrifying. It was terrifying because we knew what was going on. We knew why it was going on. And yet, in a lot of ways, we were powerless to stop it because there were just so many people who were listening to resources and to voices of authority that they should have been able to trust, but who were giving them bad information, either misinformation or even worse, disinformation. Families always want to make the best decisions for their children. I truly, truly believe that. But if you're making decisions based upon bad information, that's going to lead you to the wrong decision a lot of the time. So for folks like me, it was terrifying to see this and realize that, okay, we need to be pivoting. We need to be doing things a little bit differently to try to reach these communities. and try to get the real information, the science-based information to them.
Most of the outbreak was centered around Spartanburg County, where I think the majority of schools have measles or had measles vaccination rates of less than 95%, which is kind of the baseline for preventing larger outbreaks. What is Spartanburg County like?
So Spartanburg County is in the upstate of South Carolina. It's a beautiful area, I will tell you that. I went to college at Clemson University in the upstate. It's gorgeous. But there are some communities up there, and in particular, there are some schools up there with eye-poppingly low immunization rates. There was at least one school that had an immunization rate at the beginning of all this below 20%.
Wow.
And once that happens, I mean, you're not talking anywhere near 95%. Once that happens, all it takes is one person with measles.
Wow.
Because that one person with measles in a room with 100 unvaccinated people, 90 of them are going to get measles. It is that contagious. What people didn't realize is that, yes, the upstate area did have the lowest immunization rates, but very few parts of South Carolina hit that 95% immunization rate that you need for herd immunity for measles. I'm in Columbia, in the capital of the state. We're not at 95% right now. There are very few places that are. And literally, as we are sitting here, our immunization rates are dropping.
God.
Because of misinformation and disinformation. So it's just terrifying.
Okay, so I would assume some part of this predating, let's say, MAHA, RFK Jr., and the mainlining or the mainstreaming of anti-vax ideology is access to healthcare, right? Like some of those vaccination rates have to just be because people aren't seeing, kids aren't seeing their doctors maybe in the same way, or is it mostly owing to politics and sort of cultural preferences?
And right now it is mostly owing to politics. I would say in South Carolina, we really do have a good system of public health here. And we really do make sure that kids do have access to vaccines. We've got a really good relationship between our state Medicaid department and our chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. We work very well together. We work very well together with our Department of Public Health. And the efforts have really, truly been there to get the education out since the beginning of this and make sure we get those numbers up. So I really don't think it's been access. Even in the midst of the outbreak, the Department of Public Health was sending mobile vaccination units up to the Spartanburg area. But initially, they weren't getting much uptake.
Wait, is it, I mean, people must see children contracting measles, and they, is it that they don't think measles is a big deal, or they're just so worried about the vaccine giving their child autism or some other?
It's a combination of both. It is now a whole lot of information from people that they should trust or should be able to trust, essentially saying measles is not a big deal. Measles is not going to be a problem. Most people do fine with measles. And it is folks just creating fear about the vaccine itself and continuing to imply, even if they don't directly state it, continuing to imply that the vaccine is bad, that the vaccine causes autism simply because there's more autism. People saying things like, well, if you're going to get the vaccine, you should get the individual component vaccines, except oops, that doesn't exist.
That's the measles vaccine separate from mumps and rubella.
Separate from rubella.
Doesn't exist.
It does not exist in the United States. It will not exist for years. And there's no reason for it to exist. But that just stokes the sense of fear. If someone that I should be able to trust is saying this, there must be some reason that I should not trust this vaccine. And that's what filters back down to us in our offices and leads to folks coming in saying, well, yeah, maybe I don't want these vaccines.
Who is someone they trust? Is that sort of the grapevine, or is that actually people going on the internet? Is that people listening to RFK Jr.?
It is people listening to RFK Jr.
Wow.
And unfortunately, he is one of those people they should be able to trust.
Right.
That's the problem. They have grown up thinking, okay, this guy is the head of HHS. I should be able to trust him. He should be disseminating valid information that is backed by science. Like I said, these parents want to make the right decision, but they're getting their information from someone they should be able to trust. Unfortunately, right now, they simply can't. That information is not backed by science.
You are a doctor. You've been testifying about the importance of vaccinations. You're part of the scientific establishment. How serious is measles?
Measles is very serious. Like I said, measles is so contagious that in a room of 100 people who are not immune to measles, one person with measles walks in, 90 people are going to get measles. Historically, close to 20% of children with measles will end up hospitalized.
Wow.
Because it is such a severe infection. And somewhere in the vicinity of 1 to 3 per 1,000 will die.
Jeez.
And that's just the acute illness. There are long-term complications of measles that are horrific. There is a form of degenerative brain disease, subacute sclerosing panencephalitis, that's fatal to everybody who develops it, and it is a complication of measles. There is an immune amnesia after you get measles, where you lose a lot of your immunity to other infections, and you're literally an immune system sitting duck after having had measles. It is not a benign disease. As I tell parents all the time, vaccines are a victim of their own success. Because
right.
they work so well, we managed to get rid of these diseases. And so now suddenly we don't think these diseases are significant anymore. And so we let them come back into the communities. In the past, when that happened, you would see a reset. In other words, the diseases would come back. Everybody would say, oh my gosh, this is bad. We need to stop this. And then the immunization rates would rise. We're not seeing that this time, because now the diseases are coming back, particularly measles. But these people that you should be able to trust are all saying, we're doing a great job with measles. It's not a big deal. Don't worry about it. So you're not seeing the vaccination rates rise the way that they should.
Well, can I just say, and this is not to defend disinformation and medical misinformation, but we are at a moment of deep distrust of corporations and institutions. There is a lot of reason to be skeptical of the big pharma that has nothing to do with vaccines. People feel like institutions have failed them and the people tasked to manage those institutions, I mean, maybe excepting RFK Jr., who apparently still has some street cred, but there's just so much widespread public distrust that's not completely unfounded. What have conversations you've had with parents who are skeptical of vaccines? How have those gone for you? And like, what advice do you have for other doctors out there who are facing down measles outbreaks across the country?
I think the most important thing is to meet people where they are, to understand that every parent wants to make the best decision for their child. So I always open discussions with parents who are hesitant or distrustful by saying, hey, is it okay if we talk about this? Are you okay if we have the conversation? And then if they say yes, and the vast majority of parents do because they want good information, then I'll just say, is it okay if I talk to you about some studies and show you some information that is actually based on science and show you the numbers and show you what it really looks like and talk about what these diseases actually look like if they come back.
God.
And again, parents are going to say yes. And then you have that conversation. And the vast majority of the time, the parents are going to understand and they're going to agree. Parents typically do trust their pediatrician at the end of the day.
Yeah.
There are going to be some that are still going to be distrustful, and I'll end those conversations simply by saying, hey, can you at least go home and think about this? Let me give you some other good resources to look at, like the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, the American Academy of Pediatrics. Unfortunately, I no longer include the CDC in that list that I give out. Hopefully someday I'll be able to include it again, but I can't right now. But I give them good resources, and I say, please look at this, and then perhaps we can have another conversation. And you keep that door open. But the problem with that approach, it works. It works for me almost every time. But it is so time consuming.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And as a busy pediatrician, how many times in a day can you do that?
Yeah, it puts an enormous burden on doctors and nurses, like more than already exists. And it's an emotional weight, too, I'm sure, where you're trying to...
Well, particularly when you're also fighting that same battle at the state house, when you have folks, again, in positions of authority who constituents should trust, when you have them literally in a subcommittee hearing essentially telling you that you're lying.
Wow. Okay, I got one more for you. I mean, we're recording this the week a lot of kids go back to school. According to the CDC, big asterisk there, but vaccination coverage among American kindergartners is now around 92.4%. Mm-hmm. That was circa, those are the stats from last year. They've, as you say, those numbers have been falling. How does it make you feel knowing though those vaccination rates are already too low to prevent herd immunity and are going lower?
Again, it's terrifying, and not just about measles. Here in South Carolina, we start school way, way earlier here. Mm-hmm. So our schools have been back for weeks now. I think we started August 4th, something like that. So our kids have been back in school, and we're already seeing lots and lots and lots of sick kids. We're already seeing COVID numbers start to kick back up again. We're seeing some kids with RSV. Well, once you put kids in a classroom and... I mean, things are going to pass around. Some of them you can't prevent, but some of them you can. And as we see the immunization rates drop, it is not just going to be measles. It's going to be whooping cough, which is another awful infection. It's going to be flu as we get into flu season. It's going to be COVID. It is going to be rotavirus for the babies. And this whole issue doesn't stay with measles because it bleeds out beyond that to all of the other routine preventative interventions that we do, things like vitamin K for newborns to prevent neonatal bleeding, catastrophic bleeding, strokes, all of that. It's all falling prey to the same issue. Once folks start to fall into that trap of believing the misinformation and the disinformation, it spreads. And so suddenly they're not trusting any routine interventions.
Wow. That's just a cascade effect of...
Mm-hmm, totally.
Just devastating proportions. Well, listen, thank you for your relentless advocacy and, you know, shining a light on what's happening and how other people can manage this just crisis of completely our own making. It is just, you know, what you're doing is so essential. And I'm so grateful that you had a couple minutes to chat with me.
Well, I appreciate it. If I could say one last thing, it would simply be, if you have questions, talk to your pediatrician, talk to the person who you entrust to care for your child. They will tell you the truth. They will give you good answers.
Talk to Doc. Thanks, Deborah.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
After the break, my conversation with Dr. Nathan Keller. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. If I could wake up tomorrow and be better at managing my children's tempers, be a more thoughtful, patient parent, I would be super, super psyched. Now, I'm thinking about that because I just want to be someone who is more in control of my emotions, my highs, my lows, and more grounded in my everyday. Better at these things. Well, better is a feeling, and it's defined by you. And for BetterHelp, it's a BetterHelp therapist who really gets you. It's a focus on global emotional well-being with thousands of therapists and millions of members in over 100 countries. And it's getting better at, I don't know, thinking about other people and not just yourself, being a citizen of the world and confident in your own skin as you go out into that world. Being better at things is also about putting your best foot forward and feeling good about the shoes you walk in. And I don't mean apparel. I mean your soul. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/runawaycountry. That's betterhelp.com/runawaycountry. Runaway Country is brought to you by ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol. Between work, family responsibilities, and everyone needing something from you all of the damn day long, getting together with friends can feel like a form of self-care. Whether it is a glass of wine at a dinner or a long overdue girls' night, I make sure to drink ZBiotics pre-alcohol before alcohol so I can enjoy the evening. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to break down acetaldehyde, a byproduct of drinking alcohol. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme that is designed to break down this byproduct. Make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, and enjoy your next day activities. ZBiotics has sold more than 14 million bottles and has earned the trust of thousands, including us. Try it for yourself today, and if you are unsatisfied, they will refund your entire order, no questions asked. Head to zbiotics.com/Alex, code Alex for 15% off your first order. Up next, my conversation with Dr. Nathan Keller, a pediatrician in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. Now, Lancaster is a very solidly red county that Donald Trump won by 16 points in the 2024 elections, making the conversations that Dr. Keller has with patients about vaccinations very, shall we say, delicate. Here's our conversation. Tell me what it's been like. I mean, you're in the middle of a measles outbreak. I think a lot of us thought this kind of thing wouldn't be happening in the 21st century. What's it been like to be on the front lines of it?
Yeah, it's definitely not something that we anticipated being in the middle of as well. It's been a need to just kind of pivot and adjust on the fly as we go forward. And it's a privilege to be in the position to help guide families through a lot of questions, a lot of confusion. Thankfully, we have a great staff and a good medical community here in Pennsylvania, but here also in Lancaster County that really provides some good backdrop for each other to be able to tackle the issues that come up as they do.
Tell me a little bit about the community. And like, I'm sure you have some conclusions as to why the virus has spread as it has. Is it medical disinformation? Is it a cultural divide over vaccinations? I mean, what can you tell me about just where you are and why in particular it's been hard hit?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of things. I think there is, we do have a large Plain Sect, Amish and Plain Mennonite community that really aren't necessarily anti-vaccine. It's just their culture, their philosophy on things is a little less preventative. And so immunization rates are very low in that group. So in that regard, I think we kind of recognize we were a little bit of a tinderbox waiting to happen if measles found their way into the community that it could run. And so there's that element. And then there's the element where some of our other general population is our vaccination rates are just lower based off of, again, philosophy. I'm sure there's some misinformation that comes into play with that as well, too. So that combination of things in the area kind of really, once measles started coming in late spring, early summer, it's really kind of taken off and just been a little hard to get a hold of.
You say that you guys were like thinking, oh, we could be a tinderbox if this comes in.
Yeah, I think just based on our immunization rates alone, again, herd immunity is considered 95% or above, and we're definitely not there just because of the makeup of our population. And while those Amish and Plain Mennonite communities are a little isolated, there's still plenty of overlap in the infrastructure of the county. So that's definitely an opportunity that something as contagious as measles is going to take off.
With that, I won't even say expectation, but with that reality baked in, right? You're like, okay, well, we already structurally have a less vaccinated population because we have these large populations of Amish and Mennonite residents. Then you kind of hear the Secretary of HHS talking about measles, like adding fuel to the skepticism over vaccines. How did that make you feel, knowing what you know about the population that you're surrounded by?
It's been really challenging as a physician watching, especially as a pediatrician, watching these parents of newborns, of young children that have to try to weed through that information. And if any parent will tell you, having a child in and of itself is a scary feat because you're taking care of another human. And so when you're trying to make the best choice for that child, but you're getting different input, there's kind of some fear stoking on, I think, both sides. I have parents that come in that are scared of the measles vaccine. I have parents that come in that are terrified of measles in the community. Mm-hmm. And so really, as the provider in the middle of that, you're trying to have same conversation, but coming at it from different angles to try to guide people towards a comfortable truth so that they can kind of make a decision that's good for them and the right decision for them, for their child to get there.
I'm interested in you saying that it's both sides, because what we hear about is mostly vaccine skepticism. But you're saying that, I mean, is it a concern that too many parents are worried about measles?
Meaning the infection itself?
Yeah. I'm trying to understand when you feel like you're caught in the middle between two sort of sides that are warring in many ways, if not literally, what does that really mean?
Yeah. So I think it's trying to alleviate fear. I think fear is the enemy of most situations. And I think when I say we see it on both sides, we have the HHS secretary that again is kind of stoking those flames of misinformation when it comes to vaccines, and even if not that, just eroding trust in the healthcare system as a whole. But then on the other side, we have again recently politicians, the governor that runs to a platform, maybe with not all the information. And so rather than talking about the issue at hand, which is children who are vulnerable to measles, it opens a whole different discussion as far as like, well, what is the whole story? What is that situation? So in the midst of that, unfortunately, is those families and those children that, again, are vulnerable and trying to, again, as their pediatrician, guide them to a decision that is comfortable for them.
When you talk about the back and forth between Kennedy and Shapiro, it seemed there was like a lot of public litigation, if you will, around the cause of death here. The Lancaster County coroner, Stephen Diamantoni, came out and gave his assessment. The state secretary of health had her assessment. How unusual is it to have this much public political fighting over something like cause of death? I mean, it just seems, to those of us not in the profession, it seems real unusual and is a, you know, placeholder for a bigger political fight.
Absolutely. And for us as well, especially in the world of pediatrics, thankfully in pediatrics, kids generally are healthy. We don't have to deal with a lot of tragedies. And that's exactly what it is. And what gets lost in the shuffle of it is that we have parents that have gone through the worst thing that you can imagine. And rather than being supported in that, they're put themselves in being interviewed and questioned and things like that as well, too. So I think, unfortunately, when politics gets into a place it doesn't belong, and I would feel that medicine is that place, that's where things get really muddy, and it makes it really tricky. So yeah, from our standpoint, having to answer political questions in the medical field is unusual. It's not something now, obviously, coming through COVID. There was some of that.
Yeah.
That's really what brought it into place. And I think that's really where that public trust kind of fell apart, and people kind of started making medical decisions based off of political views, when really the beautiful thing about medicine is that it's objective truth. You have a diagnosis or you don't. The treatment works or it doesn't. But when you start bringing political opinion into it, it makes it really hard for patients and providers to navigate.
Yeah, well, politics, the politicization of COVID, the politicization of vaccines, and then also misinformation. I mean, I would assume it's pretty frustrating. You're talking to parents who are scared, but I would assume, where are they getting their information about vaccines if they're vaccine skeptics? You know, I mean, can you help?
It obviously varies as we go along. Some of our parents are getting younger and younger as we go forward. And so a large portion of their information is through social media. So it used to be at the start of my career was, I Googled this and this is what I found. And now it's, I saw this on TikTok or I saw this on Instagram. And so unfortunately, there's a lot of sources that, again, aren't vetted or aren't kind of authentic in the information that's being shared. And then again, because it's been politicized, it depends on your news source as well, too. And so that's where being Lancaster is somewhat diverse in political views, that those conversations I can see coming in the door and have to try to kind of steer people back towards that middle of all right, let's give you the actual data, the evidence, let's help you make a decision that's based on real things. And again, that's a privilege. It's part of the job we kind of signed up for. It looks different than maybe what we signed up for it to be, but it is a privileged position to be that that trusted provider that families still, at the end of the day, when handled respectfully and appropriately, they value.
I know that you're like not in the business of fear mongering, and I appreciate and I salute that. But I also think it is scary. You know, it is scary to hear about two little children dying. And it is scary to think about, you know, vulnerable kids out there who aren't in many cases making decisions about their vaccination schedule or even their medical care and paying the consequences for their parents' political leanings or predilections. Like, how is it emotionally to be both in the room with parents who don't want to vaccinate? Well, your practice is vaccinations only, right? But how is it to be in a community where this stuff, I mean, you said it's a tinderbox. It's running through your community and it's, you know, the collateral damage is extraordinary. What's it like emotionally to be a caregiver in the middle of all that?
It's tricky. And I've found myself in situations with dear friends, even family members that have different views on immunizations and different medical care as well. And so there's, thankfully, just in my approach to it, I think try to prioritize a respectful conversation about that. And really, as a pediatrician, and whether I'm their pediatrician or their friend or a family member, really circle back to the common ground that they are doing their best to make a decision that's best for their child. I, as a provider or friend, is thinking in my way to help them do what's best for their child. And at the end of the day, we might disagree. The unfortunate thing is that, again, like you said, kids are underrepresented in all of this. So whether it's the healthcare decisions, whether it's the political decisions, they don't have a say. But I do believe that, again, the parents at the end of the day are trying to do what's right. And so I look at it as my position to share what I know, only what I know, not elaborate on more than that, so that they can hopefully see what, again, I believe is that objective truth that the evidence points towards. Immunizations, vaccines are a net positive that are going to keep their child safe.
Dude, that's a careful line. I can hear it in your voice. You are very careful in your language, even on a podcast. I can't imagine what it's like in the exam room.
It's tricky, but again, I wouldn't want to be doing anything else anywhere else. So it's a privilege.
Okay. Godspeed, Doc. We'll be watching. Please keep us posted and good luck out there.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Up next, putting this all into context with Hysteria's Aaron Ryan. But first, my new book, The Steal, 4 Right-Wing Hardliners, 1 Republican Presidency, and The Raid on America's Courts, comes out September 15th, and you can pre-order it right now. If you want to hear more about the secret history behind the Supreme Court's steep lurch rightward and the decades-long conservative plot to raid the bench, this book is for you. And not unimportantly, I will be crisscrossing the country this fall with book events in New York on September 15th with the great Melissa Murray of Strict Scrutiny and McNally Jackson Books. You can still get tickets for that. I'll be in Los Angeles on September 17th with our friend John Lovett and Writer's Block. And I will be in San Francisco with Kamau Bell at the Commonwealth Club on September 21st and in Boston on September 22nd with NPR's Indira Lakshmanan. It is all going to be awesome. Tickets are still available. Please buy one now. Runaway Country is brought to you by Wild Alaskan Company. I am super skeeved out when I go to the fish counter and there's like mystery fish that looks kind of mushy, or I just can't smell it and understand how fresh it is. I just want better options when I'm cooking fish at home. Wild Alaskan Company offers the best way to get wild-caught, high-quality seafood delivered to your door on your schedule. Every Wild Alaskan box comes with these little individually portioned fillets, which are vacuum-sealed. They fit in my freezer quite nicely. They are easy to prep, and they are great for any meal, no matter how quick or how elevated. Every order supports sustainable harvesting practices and Alaskan fishermen whose history is tied to the region and practice. I loved my first box and my second and my third. I love this stuff. It fits into my life. You can do single portions. You can do multiple portions for a family style cookout, marinate your salmon and some teriyaki, throw it on the grill. Come on, do it for yourself. Wild Alaskan Company is so confident that their fish is the best that they offer a 100% satisfaction and money back guarantee, so you can try your first box risk free. Go to wildalaskan.com/Alex for $35 off your first order of premium wild caught seafood. That is wildalaskan.com/Alex for $35 off your first order. Thanks to Wild Alaskan Company for sponsoring this episode. Runaway Country is brought to you by Little Spoon. Anyone who is a parent knows that feeding decisions are not a one-time thing. And all too often, the options that are out there, whether you're feeding a little baby or a toddler or even a big kid, do not meet the standards you want to set for your kid. And it all makes you wonder, why does it feel like there are more high-quality food options for dogs than there are for children? Well, Little Spoon is one trusted place you can shop for meals and snacks for babies, toddlers, and big kids. And they're all made with real ingredients without having to rethink every choice or lower your standards at every developmental milestone. Little Spoon shows up at your door and it takes one very big decision off your plate without compromising on what is important. I love it because they are genuinely delicious and nutritious. They're incredibly convenient and they're delivered to my front door. Can everything work this way? Feeding the Kids does not have to be complicated. Get 30% off your first online order at littlespoon.com/Alex with code ALEX. That's littlespoon.com/Alex with code Alex for 30% off your first order. Give them meals and snacks that are actually right for where kids are developmentally, balanced, intentional, and made to support real growth. Go to littlespoon.com/Alex and enter code ALEX for 30% off your first order. Aaron Ryan, welcome back. Labor Day is over. School is in full swing. And measles is apparently at full tilt as well. If only there was something parents could do to prevent their children from contracting measles. The reality, Aaron, is that people have deep and abiding mistrust of the pharmaceutical industry and of the medical establishment for reasons that are, in many cases, legit. Like, the healthcare industry has failed a lot of Americans. Let's talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm happy to be here talking about measles, my favorite back-to-school theme.
Yeah. Mead notebooks. Mm-hmm. Ticonderoga pencils. And
running
measles.
Down a dirt road and hitting a hoop with a stick.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the kids are doing these days, and they're getting measles.
Because we're back in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that there's two things happening. One is the abiding institutional mistrust, distrust is coming full bore. It is being aided and abetted and stoked by Trump and the administration for political ends, not because they want to reform institutions. And it has created just this extraordinary storm. And that storm is an outbreak of a totally preventable virus that actually, like, reading these stories makes me mad. How do you feel just, like, as a parent as you watch this all unfold with kids who are young-ish?
Yeah, they're young. They're 4.5 and 2. And so, you know, they're both all vaccinated. They're all up to speed. But I do have friends that are having babies. And I think about how anxious I was when my girls were really little and how unfair and infuriating it is that people who cannot be vaccinated, like, you know, infants, people mm-hmm. who are highly immunocompromised, are now facing the consequences of people who just choose not to trust the medical science. So it's like, it's pretty infuriating. I will say where I live in California, they have a pretty robust vaccine requirement for schools.
Yeah.
So I'm not worried about my kids really, like, interacting with unvaccinated children, even though they're vaccinated, so I'm not worried that they would necessarily get sick. But I feel like in places where the guidelines are not so robust, mm-hmm. My heart breaks for those parents who are doing everything right or who are trying to follow the right schedule or who have won the unlucky lottery and their kid can't get vaccinated. It just feels very unfair and deeply, I'm going to say this, I probably shouldn't, but I'm not an elected official. It feels deeply stupid mm-hmm. that misgivings about settled science and paranoia and misinformation is now giving them anxiety about something they can't actually help. It's very frustrating. I wonder how you feel about it, Alex. Your kids are a little bit older than mine.
Mine are, and they're fully vaccinated. And I gotta say, I read this story with, like, you know, I think it's hard for me to put my feet in the shoes of people who choose not to vaccinate their kids because it seems so irresponsible, not just for their kids, but for other kids in their community. But that's where I think the problem is like, what attitude do you take towards those who are recipients and believers in the misinformation and the disinformation? And, like, you know, we began this episode talking to pediatricians about how that conversation goes, because the reality is that, like, In the broadest sense, people are skeptical of the medical establishment. I wonder kind of what you think about the politics of this. Because if I were a betting person, and I'm decidedly not in the Trump years, although the rest of the country has just asked Kalshi, mm-hmm. I would not have thought that Trump would have gone. I mean, he is a charlatan, ne plus ultra. That's a lot of different language words in one sentence. And mm-hmm. so, like, I mean, it's not that he has a conscience per se, but I am surprised that he has drank the Kool-Aid on the anti-vax conspiracy theories as much as he has, to the degree that he's in the Oval Office making pronouncements and executive orders and otherwise a fool of himself. And I wonder kind of how you think, like, what do you think it is? Is it just RFK's magical pixie dust that he sprinkles over Trump's Big Mac before they meet? Or, I mean, are you surprised, I guess I should begin with, that Trump has become an anti-vaxxer in the course of becoming president for the second time? Because he certainly didn't really sound that way from the beginning, and all of his kids, including himself, are vaccinated. And of course, he oversaw Operation Warp Speed, which developed the mRNA COVID vaccine.
Yeah, it's not surprising to me at all. I wonder if there's maybe something in his personal life that he wants to be able to blame on vaccines instead of his old sperm, which is much more likely to cause issues with both.
Say it again, Aaron.
Trump's old sperm. You know, you knew I was going to get it out there this episode,
Thank
Alex.
You, girl.
Like, I can't get through an episode
Thank
without
you.
Talking about old sperm. Anyway, I wonder if there's something in his personal life, if either somebody that's close to him is dealing with developmental issues or some sort of mental concern that he is eager to blame on vaccines or the pharmaceutical industry. I also think that he has such a boner for hating Dr. Anthony Fauci that he kind of knee-jerk reaction to everything the medical establishment says now that he believes that COVID is what is responsible for him not getting reelected in 2020. I think his knee-jerk response to anything the medical establishment says is, fuck you. I think that he wants to disavow everything that Anthony Fauci and public health officials said, because I think that he blames public health officials for his electoral loss in 2020. And I think it's not surprising, given just the makeup of his personality and his pettiness and his general desire to get revenge on people that he thinks has wronged them. For him, I think this is a form of revenge on Dr. Anthony Fauci.
Well, yeah, and it's like Stop the Steal Part 2, and somehow involves like the CDC and Fauci and the COVID response.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think you and I share the belief that it's kind of crazy not to vaccinate your children.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the strategy on how to convince people to vaccinate their children is complicated. We were talking to these pediatricians, or one of them, who was like, you know, you can't just go in there wagging your finger. You can't just be angry at the people who are dealing with the communities that are dealing with measles outbreaks. You got to get them back into the land of fact and reality. And the way to do that is by, I think, not being as aggressive or perhaps punitive in your zeal. And on that note, I sort of wonder how you feel like Governor Josh Shapiro did in the days after these two infants died in Pennsylvania. He came out swinging. Said, you know, I mean, he didn't blame the communities, but he decidedly pointed fingers at Trump and RFK. And while I think that's totally legit, and I could give a shit about, you know, giving RFK a way to save face, or, I mean, he is a perpetrator of death in this country, or I wouldn't call him Dr. Death, but he's responsible, I think, in many ways for this outbreak.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But like, for the people who still believe in this administration and RFK, like, should people temper their language? Is there a better way to talk about measles and vaccination and medical disinformation than decrying the people who are out there in the streets hawking it?
Yeah, I don't know. If I knew the answer to that, I would be charging people tens of thousands of dollars a month as a consultant on messaging, and I would be, you know, successful and living in a swimming pool. But I think that's the million-dollar question. It's like, shaming doesn't work. Shaming is a pretty ineffective way. Or does it? I don't know. I feel like we've kind of abandoned shame as a country.
Can we talk about it in the larger context of MAGA, though? Because this is like sort of the essence for Democrats and people who are, again, living in a fact-based world.
Yeah.
Like, how do you de-escalate? How do you get people out of the cult?
Yeah, I don't know. And the thing about how Governor Shapiro responded to the infant's death felt very human to me. Like, he's angry. He lashes out a little bit. But I also think that politically speaking, maybe that's not the move for a political communicator. You know, like, I'm a podcaster. I can, you know, say things are stupid or whatever. But I think that Governor Shapiro's role is to, you know, he's a human. We don't want a robot governing us. That's not ideal. But I also think that because he jumped to blaming measles when it hadn't been fully established that measles was exactly the thing that killed. I think the issue is, on the left and progressives and people who believe in public health need to be very careful with their words, because the anti-vaccine side of things will really burrow into any ambiguity, mm-hmm. really look for any way to read communication from pro-vaccine people, pro-public health people, as bad faith, as somehow manipulative. And so if you say something that is in any way slippery or not nuanced enough, they will exploit that. Yeah. And they did with Governor Shapiro, even though he was mostly right, but he wasn't 100% right. And he could have been a little bit more surgical with the way that he engaged with these two infant deaths. Now, again, that is infuriating that these two babies died. I do not blame him for being angry, but I think it's really important to use this as a teaching moment. This wasn't a disaster on his part, but moving forward, it's very important for public communicators, people talking about public health, to be as precise as possible in their language and to say, we don't know for sure what happened. We are looking into it, but this is the direction that this is what we're looking into, rather than presenting things as fact when they're not fully established as fact yet.
Yeah. I mean, just how fucked is that dichotomy, right? Anti-vax or lunatics can go out there with tinfoil hats on and say, all vaccines cause autism. Your children are going to have seizures if you give them these life-saving medications, and nobody has to pay the piper on that. But if you aren't exactly surgically precise in your scientific evaluation of what happens, you get taken out to the woodshed, or claimed you are deemed a liar in the eyes of people who are literally pushing the worst kind of misinformation and disinformation themselves.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think this answers maybe gets closer to an answer of your question about how do we get people out, which is that there's a very, very narrow path, a tiny little narrow path to get people out. And that is to be very careful. It's sort of I grew up with chickens, and if you're trying to catch a chicken, you can't just run up and be you have to sneak up on it and be gentle and very careful. And because if you make a wrong move, then the chicken's fuck you, and it runs away, or a rabbit, or whatever you're trying to catch and not hurt ostensibly. I was not an animal hurter. I was just usually removing them from danger. So I think it's really important to kind of take that approach. You need to understand that these people are scared. These people are in a kind of, they're in a heightened mode that is not necessarily one that can be reasoned with. You just, calmness and accuracy and non-threatening slow movement is probably the best way to be able to approach them. And part of that is to be super, super careful. Yeah, to further torture this analogy, they could flap around all they want. You still need to catch them, right? So that kind of is, analogous to the fact that any wild statements that are totally over the top and that can be disproved are acceptable and don't prevent them from leaving. But on the pro-vaccine side, those statements, unless they are exactly 100% true and have all the nuance in them, will cause them to continue flapping. I think it's just the nature of dealing with people that are panicking.
Well, it's also just a word of warning for the road ahead. If and when, let's say, the science, reason, and fact-based reality once again run the government, there's going to be a big question about how to handle the sort of lost 35% of the country that doesn't believe in our shared reality. More of my conversation with Aaron in just a moment. But first, we are so super excited to announce the launch of Crooked's newest series, Still Counting, from the folks who brought you the 538 podcast. There is a lot of data and information that is just coming at us all the time. And so much of it is misunderstood and manipulated. But Nate Silver, Claire Malone, and Galen Druk have spent their careers breaking down political polls and data, honing their expertise in the numbers behind politics. Every Wednesday evening, they dig into the most up-to-date political polling to explain what's happening, why, and what might happen next. No spin, no hot air, no false sense of certainty. Can you really ever have a sense of certainty in these trying times? They'll cover everything from elections to prediction markets to AI and even sports. The first full episode is out now, so subscribe to Still Counting wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube. This episode of Runaway Country is brought to you by our friends at Wild Grain. Wild Grain delivers sourdough bread, seasonal pastries, and French butter made by small independent bakeries that come right to your door. Everything bakes straight from frozen in 25 minutes or less with simple, recognizable ingredients you can pronounce. So you can have warm, bakery-quality goods whenever you want without worrying about them going stale. You can customize the boxes with classic, gluten-free, vegan, or protein options, and with flexible subscriptions, you can skip or cancel anytime. I was ordering Wild Grain boxes before I was reading Wild Grain ads. Their croissants are pop, pop, bang, bang, wow. It's all delicious, and it makes me look like a super mom. If you are looking for an easy way to enjoy bakery quality food at home, I definitely recommend giving Wild Grain a try. The fan favorite apple cider donuts and other fall seasonal products are back for a limited time, so make sure you order those before they sell out. Visit wildgrain.com/runaway to get $30 off your first box, plus free croissants for life. Again, that is wildgrain.com/runaway for $30 off your first box. And did you hear me? Free croissants for life. Or use promo code runaway at checkout.
Your sausage McMuffin with egg didn't change. Your receipt did. The sausage McMuffin with egg extra value meal includes a hash brown and a small coffee for just $5. Only at McDonald's for a limited time.
Price and participation may vary. Promotion pricing may be lower than meal pricing.
I'm Nate Silver.
I'm Galen Druk.
And I'm Claire Malone.
We're back, this time with our friends at Crooked Media for a new show called
Still Counting.
Yeah.
Numbers are hard, takes are easy.
And frankly, numbers have only gotten harder.
What does the data actually say? How do we reconcile that with the other things that we're seeing in American politics and around the world? And how do we use that data to understand or maybe even dare to predict the future of American politics?
New episodes every Wednesday starting September 9th. Subscribe to Still Counting on youtube.com/@stillcountingpodcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Speaking of stupid, we talked about Trump's kind of skin in the game here, which is political opportunism and perhaps personal vendetta. I kind of wonder what you think about that fucking guy, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I believe you did a whole episode of this fucking guy on that fucking guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of wonder whether you ever think he's going to have to pay the piper on any of this, this misinformation that's causing, I mean, I would argue that is causing one of the like gravest public health crises in the last several years. RFK Jr. is the antithesis of what an HHS secretary should be. And he has shirked responsibility in the most profound sense of the word. Will it matter? I mean, Trump doesn't have a great record with cabinet secretaries. They usually hang around for a little while. But even the measles notwithstanding, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has not seemed to suffer a bit in the president's estimation.
If you listen to the interview that Cheryl Hines did with Katie Miller, apparently people like give them dirty looks and stuff when they go out. Oh. So that's punishment enough, right? They sometimes don't get to enjoy eating at a restaurant. Of course, I'm just kidding. But I think Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has, if nothing else, sullied his family name in a way that I'd imagine people are not appreciative of, that a couple members of his family have expressed that they're not appreciative of. He has taken a multi-generation legacy of political engagement and public service and made it into a joke. Like The Onion, the satirical newspaper, now has a recurring kind of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. characterization where he's like, you know, advising kids to get how many animal bites they need to get by the time they're four. You know, it's like he's a gross person. I don't think anybody normal could listen to him talking about public health and about things like teenagers' sperm and not think this is like a truly strange and gross person. I don't think that a lot of people in the Trump orbit have really done the napkin math about what happens to them when Donald Trump is no longer the leading figure of the right in America. I think they're just kind of YOLOing it at this point. But I can't see RFK Jr. Having another like position in any government after this. I can't see him being anything but a sort of cult adjacent charlatan, maybe hawking his own brand of like blood-based juice additives.
Involving testicles. I'm sorry. I think it's something involving animal testicles. He's very, very, very interested in animal testicles.
He's very interested in testicles. He's very interested in sperm counts. He's very interested in like teenagers.
Old sperm, because he has old sperm.
He's got old sperm and he feels bad about it and he wants people to. But I also think like there's something really insidious about his entire worldview when it comes to science. Like the F in Robert F. Kennedy stands for a grade he would get on a 10th grade science exam based on his belief system. He actually believes in something called miasma theory, which I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I'm sure not.
Okay, so it has long been established by science that the cause of disease is viruses, but there are some who disagree. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is one of them. He subscribes to this debunked mid-19th century theory that sickness is actually caused by decaying organic matter like miasmas. So like garbage or bad food that you eat causes like a cloud of sickness. I swear to God, this is like a real thing. Causes like a cloud of sickness. And so eating bad foods can cause you to develop pneumonia, or like it's not the germs, it's not viruses, it is actually what you eat and like materials that you spend time in and around. So if you happen to like stumble and fall in a pool of toxic sludge, then you could develop AIDS or whatever.
If you spend enough time around Roundup, you might, you might get something bad. Like,
right.
There is a link to environmental toxins and certain diseases. But
To
purely blame external factors for disease and sickness is very 19th century.
So this is kind of how a lot of people kind of back into beliefs that they share with RFK Jr. without realizing the origin of those beliefs, which is that the only thing that matters is what you eat, what you put into your body, and the environment that you're in. Instead of like, but you should also get vaccinated. Like, yes, that does matter, but you should get vaccinated because diseases
it doesn't have to be either or.
Because diseases are caused by viruses, but the miasma theory is the belief that they're not actually caused by viruses. So therefore, any antiviral treatments or preventative prophylactic measures like getting vaccines are not useful because they're introducing material into your body that could cause you to get sick. That's literally what he believes. So I think that his legacy is going to be one of just a retro set of completely ridiculous theories that caused a lot of harm and a lot of death.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I agree with you that I want to agree with you that he's relegated to the dustbin of history and is known as the sort of like the Rasputin of the Trump administration.
So many Rasputins.
We're no shortage of Rasputins. I just mean in this sort of occult worship of the sort of strange occult theories and like whispering in Trump's ear to the great betrayal of the nation. But I do feel like Maha, like the strange intersection of the snake eating its own tail, where you have sort of liberal environmental concerns. At traditionally liberal values in terms of like food safety, health, some regulation in terms of additives and chemicals, meets this kind of back to the landism trad wife matrix. I imagine that remains. And I think like we would be misguided to forsake Maha as a movement that just ends when RFK is either kicked out of office or no longer is in office anymore as HHS secretary. And I would urge you to look no further than what's happening in the 2026 midterms. For people who haven't been paying attention to what's happening in the Iowa gubernatorial race, where Zach Lahn, the Republican candidate for governor, is only trailing Rob Sand, the Democratic candidate, by 3 points. This is the kind of stuff that Zach's been talking about on the campaign trail.
We're the first campaign in the country to be endorsed by the Maha organization. It came about largely because this is my natural base. I mean, this is how we've lived our lives.
I think the mRNA vaccine, and we could talk about this, is a different story. And the reason it was created primarily for profit motive and for quicker bring to market strategies is very troubling. That's why I've called for those to be shelved.
Would you consider banning the mRNA vaccine in Iowa? Any mRNA vaccine in Iowa?
Absolutely. I would. 100%.
Just The person who developed the most widely distributed mRNA vaccine was Donald fucking Trump. Operation Donald Warp Speed, the only real, true, unmitigated success of his first term was the development of the mRNA COVID vaccine, which saved hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of lives in the long term here in the United States alone. Maha ain't dead. Now, it's convenient to talk about Maha when Donald Trump is literally swirling the toilet bowl with his approval rating at 32% and the Republicans literally have no platform to speak of. But I think that there's like enduring interest in these values. Do you think it is a good strategy for Democrats to try and co-opt in some fashion? And is it possible for them to?
Yeah, actually. And I saw a news item last week that AOC was reaching out to Maha influencers. In a group chat that I was in, people were kind of feeling mixed about that, but I actually think that's brilliant. I think that people need to have a soft landing place if they're going to leave Maha and understand that Democratic Party policies are actually more in line with their values, because health, when it comes to what your body is exposed to, is way more than whether or not you have to get a vaccine. It's the water you're drinking. It's the clean air. It's the fact that, you know, public health in many cases is influenced by corporations that you have absolutely no say over. You can't like control if a refinery moves in 3 miles away and starts poisoning your water. You can't do, but you know, the government should be regulating that. And I think Democrats need to hammer that message. It kind of reminds me, so like, we've talked about this, Alex, but I grew up in a really rural area.
And when you're catching chickens slowly.
Yeah, catching chickens slowly. And then my dad hunted. My dad has, we've always had guns in our house. I learned how to handle a firearm when I was like 12. Like, I could not fire one today because it's one of those things my brain was like, don't need this, you know, whatever. All I know about now is like putting the safety on and taking the safety off and backing slowly away. Thank you. But what I wanted to compare the Maha movement to was the gun outdoorsman, sportsman's movement. I think in an alternate history, Democrats and people on the left should have realized that sportsmen, outdoorsmen, people who enjoy hunting or do it for subsistence like my dad did and does, that they should have been a Democratic capture. But instead, a lot of people that consider themselves outdoorsmen, a lot of people who enjoy hunting, enjoy fishing, enjoy the outdoors, got scared into being Republicans by the NRA and got told that their guns were going to be taken away and their life was under attack. And I think that Democrats could have made a case for gun owners, rural gun owners, hunters, outdoorsmen, that preserving the environment should be a top priority for them, that stewardship of nature should be something that we need to engage with, and that responsible gun ownership is something that a Democratic government can support. So I think Maha presents an interesting opportunity that's along those lines. Like, Democrats should absolutely be saying like, oh yeah, you want additives out of your food? How about we start like bulking up the government mechanisms to actually make sure that your food is safe? Oh, you want more reliable access to organic food? Okay, great. Let's come up with a standard and let's actually have somebody that enforces the standard. Oh, you want your water clean? Great. Let's make laws mandating that it's clean. I think that that is something that Democrats absolutely should be doing. And I think that people like AOC should be reaching out to people, especially women, because I think that women who have been kind of who have fallen into Maha, they didn't like emerge from the womb believing in this stuff. And so I think it's something that they can kind of be shepherded toward a more like holistic view of the government's role in actually promoting public health, rather than leaning on fear that it's individuals' decisions that like negatively impact their health. It's really mostly out of your hands, because it's usually something that the government should be responsible for regulating, not something that you should be responsible for doing your own research on.
I will say, I think Democrats really have an opportunity on this, because unlike, I think the gun example is a very good cautionary tale. The hurdle in that is that gun owners typically aren't in cities, and there is a natural sort of geographic separation between, you know, urban residents who face very real consequences of gun violence in their everyday lives and don't have the same connection to guns and gun hunting culture that suburban and rural residents do. And so kind of like a missed opportunity for a lot of those Democratic labs in big urban areas. But on this, I mean, I am sure you have lots of LA mom friends who are like right up to the line MAGA adjacent, no? Who are very, like, people who in another universe could be MAHA moms, right? Mm-hmm. Like, who really, accepting the vaccine skepticism and some of the more Looney Tunes, which is, and a lot of it's Looney Tunes, but Looney Tunes expressions of MAHA, like some of the bedrock principles around everything you just mentioned are totally shared by moms the country over. And so it's a real pickup opportunity for Democrats. And there's no natural, I think, separation in the coalition the way there is on something like guns, for example. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look no further than the birth industry in the U.S.
Right.
When I was pregnant with my older daughter, I really wanted to do a so-called natural childbirth, which I know every birth is natural, but like no drugs. I wanted to do no drugs. I wanted to have my baby in a birthing center. And so I did all the things. Like I went to a birthing center. I visited it. It looked great. I hired, you know, I had a doula who said that this is a really good birthing center. And just off, you know, just on a whim, I was like, oh, just wanted to know, you know, when I give birth, are all of the midwives that would be attending the birth, are they all going to be vaccinated for COVID? Because this is 2021, right? So I didn't want my baby born into a room where people could be potentially carrying like a disease, right? And the response was that they don't make anybody vaccinate for any reason. And I said, okay, well, can I request only vaccinated midwives? And they were like, no, it's like a violation of HIPAA. But that was like a real wake up moment. I ended up having to change my plan. Thank goodness I ended up going to a hospital because that epidural was amazing.
Oh, let me just say, stand up for your epidurals. Love them.
Yes, 100%.
Thank you for giving me two beautiful childbirths that really were not painful. And I salute all the women, including many of my friends who did not use them. And I also salute the use of epidurals.
Hey, get that baby out. That's the only thing. Get the baby out. Baby's okay. You're okay. That's all that needs to happen. But that moment was like really eye-opening for me because I realized that there was like kind of a horseshoe theory effect where like they were so crunchy that they came all the way around to being like right-wing Idaho bunker paranoid type people. And I think that the distrust in the birthing community is completely legitimate, the way that the medical establishment attempted to medicalize birth to the point that it's a lot of hospitals just structure every birth around the convenience of the doctor and their desire to not get sued. But the distrust that arose from that has now led to this entire industry, birthing industry, where women who really just want to do what's best for themselves and for their babies kind of get led along a path that they should actually distrust everything that the medical industry does just because some of the things it does are exploitative or harmful to patients for the benefit of doctors and hospitals.
Well, I mean, listen, we are living in a moment of deep and abiding paranoia that has resulted in really profound distrust. You see the public reaction to AI data centers, which is born out of deep skepticism around big tech and corporations. You see the really just profound distrust of the medical establishment and big pharma. I look no further than the aftermath of the Luigi Mangione attempt, the alleged Luigi Mangione killing. I mean, we are tearing down institutions that have not served us. And the question is, how do you rebuild them in a way that is takes into account all of the advances and sophistication of the 21st century, but doesn't leave people purposefully behind? I mean, it's like an extraordinary period of change. And with that comes like a lot of break off factionalism and distrust. And we got to figure out a way to reconcile all of that. So good luck to everybody who's working on that.
Good
luck. In the meantime, we will continue to get our children vaccinated. We will consult with doulas when necessary. And otherwise, enjoy the perks of the 21st century.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Get the epidural. Get the epidural.
Or don't.
But if you do,
enjoy that.
Enjoy it.
It's nice. Aaron Ryan, my friend and colleague, thank you for doing this show and talking me through the landscape of measles outbreak and conspiracy theories in Trump's America. You're the best.
Thanks, Alex. You're the best.
That is our show for this week. Don't forget to check out the show and our rapid response videos on our YouTube channel, Runaway Country with Alex Wagner. And if you are somehow not sick of me yet, take a look at my Substack, How the Hell with Alex Wagner. Last but not least, if you've been impacted directly by the Trump administration and its policies, send us an email or a one-minute voice note at runawaycountry@crooked.com, and we may be in touch to feature your story. A massive thanks to everyone who's written in already. Runaway Country is a Crooked Media production. Our show is produced by Alona Minkowski, Emma Illich Frank, Haley Jones, and Anisha Banerjee, with help from Eric Shute, Kenny Moffitt, and Charlotte Landis. Production support from Ben Hethcote, Katie Long, Adrian Hill, and Matt DeGroat. Our staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
I'm Nate Silver.
I'm Galen Druk.
And I'm Claire Malone.
We're back, this time with our friends at Crooked Media for a new show called
Still Counting.
Yeah.
Numbers are hard, takes are easy.
And frankly, numbers have only gotten harder.
What does the data actually say? How do we reconcile that with the other things that we're seeing in American politics and around the world? And how do we use that data to understand or maybe even dare to predict the future of American politics?
New episodes every Wednesday starting September 9th. Subscribe to Still Counting on youtube.com/@stillcountingpodcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste. So here's a little taste of all the delicious possibilities. Juicy, hand-picked heirloom tomatoes. Seared certified Angus steak over aged cheddar mashed potatoes. Or how about fresh dough stretched by hand for every house-made pizza? Is your mouth watering yet? From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Hey, let's talk about something a lot of us deal with, thinning hair or hair loss. If that sounds familiar, CAPS has solutions. Their hair restoration treatments are personalized, designed to strengthen your existing hair, encourage regrowth, and improve scalp health. The providers at CAPS guide you every step of the way with advanced treatments for noticeable, long-lasting results. And when you book your first hair restoration appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.